Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. You have probably heard about the allegations of racial profiling of black customers at Barney's and Macy's. Several customers have reported recently that they were stopped and detained after making legitimate purchases. Reverend Al Sharpton is threatening a boycott. New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman is investigating. There's a petition circulating to get Jay-Z to end a partnership with Barney's, where he will be selling his holiday collection. Protesters have gathered crying, "Shop and frisk." And the retailers are saying that it was the NYPD acting on their own in most of the cases. So what's going on? Racial profiling at retail stores? Well, that's a longstanding problem. Why is this bubbling up now? And is it somehow different when it happens at a high-end retailer like Barney's than at your neighborhood bodega? Joining us now is Rashad Robinson, Executive Director of Color of Change, an online civil rights organization. And we want to hear from you folks. 212-433-WNYC. Has this happened to you? What is your reaction to hearing these reports? 212-433-9692. And if you're an employee at one of these stores or a similar retailer or maybe a security guard, what is your point of view? There is definitely a legitimate concern on the part of retailers about theft. What are the rules that come down from management about the field known as loss prevention? 212-433-9692. Rashad Robinson, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for giving us some time today.
Thanks for having me.
Why specifically are people crying foul in these particular cases in different ways than happened before? I mean, I'll just say the one thing that strikes me, this is not about people moving around the aisles who are suspected, rightly or wrongly, of being potential shoplifters. These are people who actually bought stuff and gave a credit card, right?
Absolutely. And not only did they buy stuff, give a credit card, walk out with their purchase, believe they were sort of their money was just as equal as anyone else's at that cash register. And then upon leaving the store, were arrested, detained, harassed, humiliated, and had their time and day sort of taken away from them simply because of who they are and the suspicion that they couldn't possibly either afford or they couldn't possibly have shown up to the register and purchased those products legally. And so, unlike being followed around the store or somewhat or felt or being feel like you're being watched, this is a step further and a step further down the line in terms of how people's rights were violated.
In one case, a 19-year-old young man bought a $350 Ferragamo belt. In another case, a woman, I don't know what age, bought a $2,500 handbag. They were accosted by undercover NYPD. Another allegation came from Treme actor Rob Brown, who said he was handcuffed in a Midtown Macy's and held for an hour after buying a $1,300 gold. I'd be suspicious of anybody who buys a handbag for $2,500, but they sell them.
They sell them. They market them. These stores, our economic model is based on selling many of these bags so that they can earn a profit. And the fact of the matter, is that they had no reason to assume that these folks could not afford this other than the color of their skin. And the example of Ron Brown really does illustrate it. This is a young man who has been a Hollywood actor since basically his teenage years. He has, appeared in several movies, has appeared in television shows. Clearly, no one is going to, think that Ron Brown doesn't have the money to, doesn't have the money to pay for this. And he was buying this, watch for his mother's college graduation. And so, him being walked through the store, there's a lot of judgment being placed on these young people and whether or not they should have bought these products. But at the end of the day, that's not really the question. They showed up to the register with their hard-earned money. And made a decision about their purchases. And for police to step in, for The relationship with this store and the police department to still remain murky, you know, all leads us back to the type of investigation we need in this city, you know, not just around these type of policies, but the ongoing stop and frisk policy that exists in the city.
Let's take some phone calls. Our lines are jammed with people wanting to relate experiences of their own or tell stories or ask questions. KB, oh, KB's gone. How about Mitchell and, you know what? Could you help me get a caller on the air here, Debbie? I'm having a cursor problem, which seems to, and I apologize to Mitchell and KB. I seem to have accidentally disconnected you with a malfunctioning mouse or something here. So who do we have? Oh, Charles in Essex County. Charles, thanks for calling in.
Yes, I'm calling because I don't shop at JCPenney's. I haven't for, I guess, over 20-some-odd years. Because 1 year when I was doing Easter shopping with my kids, had four kids, and we went around, you know, took a few hours. We're buying clothes, getting clothes, getting them all together. And I guess I had an equivalent of about four bags of clothes. When I went to cash them out, the supervisor was actually double-checking the clerk who was checking them out. And yet when I went out the door, one of the security alarms went off. So evidently, they really, you know, they put one in, left one on there so that it would be, if I was boosting and taking stuff, you know, putting in the bags after I had checked out, we would have stopped at the door. So we got stopped at the door, and then when they checked and saw that everything, you know, was there was one that was on there. They said, that must have been left on by mistake.
JCPenney is having its own problems, like lack of anybody shopping there. But there, happened 20 years ago,
I haven't shopped there since.
Is there a point where you forgive a store and give them a second chance?
I don't know. I haven't. I mean, to this point, because I thought for the amount of money I was spending, like I say, we were buying full outfits, a lot of stuff for four kids, you know, and for them to do that, I felt was it just wasn't
racial and over the top. And it's hard to forget something like that. Charles, thank you very much. Rashad Robinson, how much do you think people should come to kind of a global judgment about these stores after this incident? Like, this is the character of Macy's. This is the character of Barney's. How far down that road do you go?
Well, I do think that we need a broader investigation around the role that the police department is playing versus these stores. I do think it also goes to how these stores respond, what type of training and development for their staff and management they put in place when these issues become public. And for, you know, our members in particular, you know, Color of Change as an online civil rights organization with nearly a million members all around the country, you know, we hear stories of injustice and kind of differential treatment on a regular basis from our members. And we can't take on every single issue that comes to light. But the through line that we are kind of consistently hearing when it comes to sort of, you know, these big department stores and the mistreatment of their customers is this idea that it is not just okay to, do this type of checking and rechecking and sort of mistreatment, but that folks won't stand up and speak out because they've been sort of, they're used to this type of treatment. Like black folks, young black folks in particular, are used to being followed around the store. It's part of sort of, you know, being black in America. And so I think the important thing that we're seeing right now is that these issues are coming to light, and stores that continue to exercise these practices and don't put in training in place will have to sort of deal with these public relations crises, mm-hmm. and will have to answer to the community.
We're talking about the high-profile incidents at Macy's and Barney's recently, legitimate black customers who had bought expensive items being shopped and frisked, if you will, after the fact, talking about it with Rashad Robinson, Executive Director of Color of Change. And we have a couple of people calling in who do work in loss prevention. That is, people who are supposed to stop folks from stealing items from stores or from engaging in credit card fraud and getting away with stuff that way. And let's go to one of them. Ed in Jamaica, you're on WNYC. Ed, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi,
how you
Ed.
Doing? Hey, how you doing, Brian? You hear me?
I can hear you fine, Ed. Thanks for chiming in.
You know, basically, I've worked in loss prevention for a major department store chain. I don't want to say the name, but you're trained, if it's a reputable security company or loss prevention company, theft prevention, shrinkage prevention, you're trained to look for certain things, people bringing large amounts of clothes into sitting rooms, people carrying bags, people having conversations, people, there are certain things they're trained to look for. No reputable company trains you to look for a specific ethnic group or a specific race of people doing something.
So how do you think these incidents might have happened from, you know, given your experience?
Well, a lot of times people come with their own preconceived notions. Some people come from law enforcement, retired law enforcement, and they have their own biases and prejudices based on their personal experiences. There's no standard for security personnel. You know, it could be a guy off the street, or it could be someone who's qualified and trained and really interested. So you basically take your cues from the store management and from your company as far as how to conduct yourself on the store floor.
And how about in an incident like this, did you ever run into this kind of thing where, again, it wasn't somebody who was suspected of shoplifting or potentially shoplifting even, but it was somebody who had actually made a purchase? And were there any circumstances under which you were trained to stop people then?
No, because this is the curious thing about these two incidences. If you suspect someone is using a fake credit card, I was trained and I was told to tell cashiers, forestall the purchase. Don't allow the purchase to go through until management or someone can come down and we can verify this individual if you suspect. And there's certain things they train cashiers to look for, especially in a high-end store like Macy's. If you allow the person to leave, then it becomes a criminal matter, and that's what I was telling your screener. Sometimes these companies can double-dip. If there's a theft of merchandise, they'll allow the merchandise to leave. It becomes a criminal matter. A case is filed. A loss report is filed. And then when the merchandise is returned after the prosecution, they can put it back on the floor and claim it as a loss. And also sell the merchandise.
Ed, thank you very much for calling in. We appreciate it. And so, Rashad Robinson, I mean, grand larceny, which includes credit card fraud, accounts for more than 75% of all crime in the precincts that cover the area where Barney's and this particular Macy's is, according to the NYPD. So do you have any sympathy for loss prevention measures that involve actual purchases? Is there evidence that only black people are being stopped on suspicion of credit card fraud or disproportionately?
Well, you know, we know from sort of, you know, records of these crimes that it's not just black people, you know, purchasing, and it's not just black people who are responsible, or not just one race that's responsible for the crimes in these stores. And we absolutely have sympathy for these companies that are either losing money or having, you know, challenges around loss prevention. I think the last caller, you know, really underscored the point around both sort of training and sort of the standard that that is needed when hiring folks to come into these jobs and these roles. People come in with their own preconceived notions, and as a result, sort of execute on that when they're you know, watching potential when they're watching potential customers or folks who are just sort of in those stores. And for us, you know, at Color of Change, what we're really asking for at this point, and what we have a sort of a petition on our website, and are really urging both our members and people all across the city and the country who want to get involved and really getting to the bottom of this, is that, you know, we can get to the bottom of this by having the NYPD release the numbers of who was stopped and frisked outside those stores. You know, like, you know, what was their race and age makeup? Let's get some data on sort of how many of them were actually charged and were guilty of something, how many of them were simply released. And when we get to those numbers, we'll start to get a sense of whether or not this was actually profiling or not.
Right.
Just the way when those numbers around, you know, 700,000 people being stopped and frisked in this city last year, those numbers came up and we started looking at the lack of conviction, the lack of finding any evidence on individuals, and started to see a story that was being told of folks' rights being violated because of who they are.
In fact, the way the current pressure on stop and frisk started was really because of a Freedom of Information request having to do with the actual numbers, which the NYPD had resisted releasing for years and then finally did, and that started a different conversation. Let me get this other former retail worker in here. Oh, I just disconnected him. See that? I did it again. It's a good thing we have Debbie Daughtry at the audio controls to bail me out day after day here. But let me ask you a different question. Maybe you'll call back. Is it somehow a greater transgression to harass someone who's participating in a rarefied luxury shopping trip than it is to follow someone around in a bodega? I mean, these brands are all about exclusivity. So do you think the suspicion rises about a person who doesn't fit the picture of the shopper in this exclusive club, and that is somehow more offensive?
I mean, I think it's all offensive, and I think that, you know, for folks who are sort of dealing with the daily offense of sort of having to constantly be questioned because of who you are, because of your background, because of your gender, your race, your appearance, and constantly, you know, being under suspicion in some way, having to deal with that and show up in those ways, whether it's in a bodega store or whether it's in a Barney's or a Macy's, I think both sort of psychologically and culturally creates a lot of challenges for people. I hear what you're saying, though, in terms of this concept that certain people don't belong in certain parts of this city. You know, the beautiful part of New York City, you know, I grew up on Eastern Long Island and always dreamed of moving to New York City because it always represented this sort of space where people could come from all over the world and you could work and you could make it. And the idea that we continue to have these two New Yorks, a New York where football coaches have to tell their young Black and Latino players to carry a helmet next to them when they're walking home to show the cops that they're a good kid and they won't be stopped and frisked. Or a kid who gets on a public transportation system that's supposed to be able to take you anywhere in the city, and the moment he gets off at certain stops, he's looked at with suspicion. The idea that we continue to live in this two New Yorks is something that none of us should be able to accept. It's what really, I think, animated this last mayoral election. And it's something that we as a civil rights organization take incredibly seriously as we demand sort of both an investigation and greater accountability on the relationship between these high-end luxury stores and our police department and the ways in which people's rights are being violated.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Rashad Robinson from Color of Change, executive director there. Just to finish up, what about Jay-Z? There's a petition going around asking him to sever his relationship with Barney's, where he's going to sell his holiday line. Do you think that he has a responsibility to take some kind of stand on this? He has said he's waiting for more information about these incidents, which is what you're calling for. But beyond these particular incidents, do you think that he and maybe his wife, a couple who definitely enjoy luxury products and definitely flaunt them, have some kind of influence on any side of this discussion or some kind of responsibility?
You know, I mean, I think, you know, Jay-Z and many of our celebrities, you know, present an image and a culture that oftentimes makes people want to yearn and want, you know, these luxury products. He's a rapper that has rapped about racial profiling, has performed and talked about his love for New York City. You know, what we've called on Jay-Z and what we hope he will do is join us in demanding this investigation and being not just waiting on it, but demanding it and demanding that Barney's and everyone else involved really, you know, participates and provides that information. You know, I could really care less, and I think our organization could really care less whether at the end of the day Jay-Z accepts Barney's money or not. That's not going to change the injustice that young people in this city continue to face and the two New Yorks we live in. But he can use his role as a public figure and a voice on these issues to both demand the information necessary for us to all have a really good assessment about what's happening. And then if we do find out that there is a level of injustice that Barney's involved in, then it will be incumbent on Jay-Z and others who are associated to really, you know, stand up and show us where they stand on these issues and where they stand on issues of racial profiling. And so we're not saying sever the ties, but we're hoping that Jay-Z will use the tie, use the influence, use the relationship that he has, and that's the power of relationship, is to use those relationships to be able to demand more information so that we can all come to a better understanding about what's happening outside of those windows and inside of those windows at Barney's and other high-end department stores.
Rashad Robinson, Executive Director of Color of Change, an online civil rights organization. Thanks a lot for joining us. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, babies are born with a sense of right and wrong, science seems to tell us. But adult morality is different. So we'll talk to Yale psychology professor Paul Bloom about inherent notions of justice versus the ones we learn. And then Ken Burns with his documentary about the Gettysburg Address as it turns 150 years old next week. And this will include Brian Lehrer Show listeners who will take different pieces of it and together recite the Gettysburg Address as Ken Burns wants everybody to do. So stay with us.